today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, room service may be going away. Will anyone notice or care? And TSA might be willing to give you a pre-check trial at a better price than $85 for 5 years. Details next.
Tips for checking out tour operators and why you shouldn't move things in a hotel minibar. And the reason vacation rentals in Hawaii are about to become harder to come by. All in our Smarter Traveler segment coming up at 3:20 today.
We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, and at 3:27, we tell you about a special Pride Month play you can see next Sunday at the new Cordova Arts Center.
Steve LaRosa is in studio to offer us the first half of his two-part series on visiting some of New Mexico's favorite destinations. Albuquerque and the Pueblo city of Taos are up today at 3:35.
Hurricane season started this month. At 3:48, Paul Fling relives his memories of Hurricane Iniki on Kauai over 25 years ago. There are lessons from Paul's experience that might help you if you find yourself in the eye of a storm someday.
It's Sunday afternoon, just after 3 o'clock, and we want to thank you for being here for the latest edition of The Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I've got two tickets to paradise.
North to Alaska. I go north to Russia's own.
All I want on an ambulance man.
I come from a land on a love.
I bless the rains down in Africa.
Get your kicks.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys, as always brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm Tom Romano here in studio. Steve LaRosa is joining us. We're hanging out together, and Mark is at, I would have to say, probably his favorite place on the planet, up in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Mark. How's those berries?
Howdy there. It's everything is nice up here. The temperature is particularly nice. It's about 70 degrees and cloudy, and I don't know what the people in Portland feel about it, but those people who are visiting from Sacramento are probably pretty happy. Hope you are not roasting too badly down there.
Well, it's a warm one today, going to be about 96 before it's all said and done. Feels, you know, kind of like it's a little humidity, but, you know, I'm not seeing it on the numbers, but it certainly has that feel, and we're just a little jealous. Now, I understand correctly that you are there with some of Sports Leisure Vacation travelers and seeing some of the sites, and what did you guys do today to start your day?
Well, I ran into them this morning at literally my favorite place in my favorite place, which is the little farmer's market in Vancouver. Now, Vancouver, Washington, not Vancouver, British Columbia, which is just over the river from Portland, and they have a beautiful little farmer's market on Saturday and Sunday. So our folks stopped there to get some goodies and some lunch before they head over to the coast. And now I'm here on the radio with you. Oh, wait a minute. I made a stop to pick up some of the year's first Marion berries to bring home with me. And now I'm here on the radio with you and back to Sacramento tomorrow.
Now, I have to ask, you always get your Marion berries, and you're saying this is the first of the crop, and I'm imagining you'll be back. Is there a significant difference between the early crop and the later crop of the berries?
No, the Marion berry season is pretty short, you know, about 4 or 5, maybe 6 weeks at the very, very most. So like most of the exotic fruit season, the berries and stuff up here, for example, the exotic strawberry season is already over. We're into big cherries, and the raspberries are out. There's about 87 different thousand kinds of blackberries up here. And the Rainier cherries, which are, of course, the cherries that are yellow and red in color, as opposed
one of my
to
favorites. Yeah,
I have a little different flavor, but those are out up here also. So if you like fresh fruit and fresh vegetables, the summertime in the Pacific Northwest is the place to be. The famous Walla Walla onions will be here in another week or so.
Well, at the beginning of every Travel Guys radio show, before we get into all the goodies that we have for you today on the program, let's do what we like to do at the top, and that's bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news, and certainly stuff almost every day. Mark, what's the list look like today?
Well, let's see here. From the headlines, room service in hotels. This travel writer says, Robert McGarvey says that it may be going the way of the dinosaurs. He thinks that food delivery apps are taking the place of room service in hotels, and his suggestion is that we are all better off for it, not only from a price standpoint, but that your food is, the chances of your food getting there and being in a little bit better shape. He was describing $150 breakfast for two that he recently got in a New York hotel room service that was delivered cold. And so the delivery apps are kind of taking the place of food, of room service. You don't have to wait any longer. And of course, if you're in a hotel that has a microwave or something, then you don't have to be concerned about whether or not the food arrives hot. So room service, another thing that may be falling away. TSA is telling us that not as many people have signed up for PreCheck as they were hoping. They had about 2.2 million new enrollees in 2016, which was their peak year, but now it's been back down considerably below 2 million in the last 2 years. There's a little over 8 million people who have PreCheck. TSA would like to see that get up to about three times that number. So what they're thinking of doing is perhaps, since it's $85 for 5 years, they're thinking of letting people enroll a little simpler and just be able to get it on a trial basis for 6 months or a year, or maybe be able to pay in installments. Pay your first installment. If you decide you don't like it, why then you can get out of the other ones or something like that. So keep your eyes, if you don't have TSA PreCheck, keep your eyes out or listen here, and we will let you know if a new opportunity comes up. Thomas, that might be your chance to jump into that PreCheck lane.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was talking to Steve, and I wasn't paying attention.
Okay.
I have to be friggin' honest. Did you just ask me a question?
I did. I was just asking you about PreCheck. Not a big deal.
Oh, did you ask me if I have PreCheck?
No, I just said, I know you don't have it, but if TSA offered it for only a year instead of 5 years, that maybe you might be enticed to go and sign up for something like that.
You know, absolutely. I should have signed up a long time ago, whether it's just 1 year. If you're just going to stop flying altogether, go ahead and take advantage of their one-year offer if they offer it up. But if you plan to do it on the long haul, yes. But for those that haven't experienced it, you know, give it a try for a year, and then you probably will want the long term.
I will tell you, it is by far some of the best $85 that I've ever spent. Every time I get to the airport and people are waiting in a 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 minute line, almost all the time my line is shorter. And when I get to the actual going through security and putting my stuff through, it's a lot simpler. So if you are traveling more than a couple times a year, especially now that we're talking about, you know, agents being redeployed to the border and things like that, it really is something that you should give a thought to. Okay, in Hawaii, they have, the legislature in Hawaii has passed two new bills. As you may have know from listening to this program, vacation rentals on Hawaii have been quite in the headlines the last couple of years. Housing is at a real shortage there. Housing is very expensive. Every time someone puts a vacation rental up, it's one less place for a local to stay. So the legislature is doing some things about it. They have passed the bill seriously limiting the number of vacation rentals and how they can be done, the areas of the islands where they can, where you can rent. A second bill was also passed, which introduces fines of $1,000 for the first offense and up to $10,000 for additional violations. So they are serious about this. If you are a vacation home renter and you're planning on doing it in Hawaii, just know that as a result of this, the number of places available to you may drop. That may cause an increase in price, or it may make a hotel a little bit more attractive to you in the future. A couple of pieces of news from United Airlines. They are hyping their club membership next year by, looks like, $150 next year. However, if you're not already in, the $50 initiation fee is going away. So if you're already United, kind of a strange way to treat your best customers, but the feeling in the industry is that the clubs are becoming very crowded and that possibly they need to charge more money or do something to try to cut down the number of people. United Airlines has announced that their 2019 college football flying schedule is out. Tom, did you know that at least United Airlines puts on all kinds of flights every year to accommodate people who might be going, let's say you're a Sac State fan, mm-hmm. and Sac State is playing Michigan, so there's a special flight, just to Michigan, a couple of days before the game, and a special flight back at reasonable prices, not charter flights, but reasonable prices. So there are, United has added a number of them. Of course, this doesn't impact Sacramento directly, but if you are an alumnus of a major university and are looking to get to one of their key games, you might take a look at United Airlines' schedule. Scientists are saying that traveling makes us much happier than any material wealth. According to a Harvard study, experiences with friends and family doing things together, particularly things when you're on the road, are much more significant than having material wealth. That's what people report.
Yeah,
Do you agree, Thomas?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. There's no doubt about it because, you take away those memories, you have those experiences, and, you know, isn't that what life is all about? It's connecting with people, not stuff.
Yep, amen. Couple of cool things on the Travel Guys Radio website. There is some folks who are working on a circular runway, an endless runway that runs in a circle and is banked. And if you'd like to see what it looks like, they're hoping to get it in service in the next 8 or 10 years. It would dramatically speed up the flow of air traffic. You can go to travelguysradio.com. There is a link there. You can click on it, and you can actually see how it works. And also, while you're there, you might want to take a look at this. Is something you may want to flag if you travel a lot and put on your cell phone. FlightAware has a misery map. And what that is it tells you the length of delays at any major airport in the country at any given moment in time, how many cancellations, how many delays, and the like. Go to travelguysradio.com, and you can click on the FlightAware misery map. Might be something that you would want to save for future reference. And that is your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys. And coming up next, Mark's going to help make us a smarter traveler, particularly when it comes to things like choosing a tour operator, or better yet, touching that stuff in the mini bar while you're on vacation. That and more coming up next here on the Travel Guys.
I'm on my way.
We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys here every Sunday, 3 to 4. Don't forget, visit travelguysradio.com. And I'm Tom. I'm in the studio here at KFBK. Mark Hoffman, my co-host, is not that far away up in the beautiful, beautiful Portland, Oregon area.
Wait a minute. If I look out the window, I think I can see you. I hear you can hear see Russia from Alaska, so I was thinking maybe you could see Sacramento from Portland, but no, not today. Not today. I think Mount Shasta is in the way.
There you go. Well, okay. Mark, we're going to spend a little time making people smarter travelers today. We're going to start with those tour operators, or are we going to go right to the minibars?
Well, let's start with the tour operators here. I happen to be one of those. I've made my living being a tour operator for many years, so I thought this was kind of interesting. This is a long article, How to Avoid Getting Taken by a Tour Operator, and I kind of boiled it down. It's, you know, a lot of these articles that are online nowadays, Tom, are about 85 or 90% fluff. And sometimes you have to go through 10 or 15 or 20 screens in order to be able to get the piece of information you're looking for. So I did all this homework for you.
Thank you.
Basically, if you're doing business with a tour operator or you're buying any other type of travel product that you think there's any possibility that it might not turn out to be exactly the way you want, and you might want to be able to protect yourself as a consumer, you want to pay with a credit card. You particularly want to make the final payment with a credit card, just in case the tour operator doesn't deliver what they're supposed to. That doesn't only apply to tour operators, it applies to a lot of other things. They talk about, in this particular article, about checking out online reviews for prospective tour operators, because negative reviews or reviews that precede a company's closing or curtailing their services oftentimes are reflected in online reviews. And that's true. So online reviews are a good place to work. But as we know from talking to our friend Chris Elliott last week, sometimes not all online reviews are 100% honest. So when you look for things in reviews, look for good reviews and look for bad reviews. Look for consistencies over a long period of time. Does the hotel have staffing problems? Is there problems with the heating and air conditioning system or the elevators? Or is this restaurant service all the time slow? Same thing with tour operators. You're looking for in what ways are people unhappy, in what ways are people happy, and do those things line up for you? And finally, if you are in the state of California, we have something called the Seller of Travel Law, and really we probably should do an entire segment on this. But basically it says, to boil it all down, if you're a resident of the state of California and someone is selling travel to you from outside the state of California, they have to have a Seller of Travel number. Many vendors do not. So if you're buying something from a vendor you've seen online or something, they don't have a Seller of Travel number, it's an extra measure of protection. That Seller of Travel number basically says that if you get skewered, you've got some people to advocate for you. And if this company happens to go bankrupt, there is actually a fund in the state of California paid into by travel advisors, tour operators, and the like, who, and that's where your refund would come from. So there are some ways of protecting yourself a little better than others. Dare I say, in the state of California, people who buy travel are a little more protected than they are in some other states. All right, let's see here. Second thing on the list today for Smarter Traveler. This, Tom, is when was the last time you stayed in a hotel with a mini bar? I saw one a couple weeks ago, but not very often. Do you run into these anymore?
Yeah, not much anymore. It has been a couple of years, and I don't even recall. It might have been at a hotel, and maybe a Marriott down in the Disney area or whatever, but not as frequently as before. You know, and even before I for the longest time, I was one of these people that was not aware that if you touched anything, even if you didn't buy it, they could charge you for it. Go ahead and tell folks what that's about.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about here. If many of these mini bars, and they are going away, which is a good thing because they were never a great idea to start with, The overpriced items in them, in many cases, are sitting on sensors. So if you pick something up, the hotel automatically charges you for it. If you pick up a bottle of beer and look at it and say, I've decided I don't want that bottle of beer, and you put it back down, it's entirely possible you'll see that bottle of beer on your bill when you go to check out. So what happens is that sometimes folks will say, well, you know, I don't have a refrigerator in this room, and the mini bar keeps these things cold, so I can put my leftover sandwich and my bottles of water in here. I'll just take the mini bar stuff out and use their mini bar. Well, then what happens, of course, is you go to check out, and there's a $187 bill charge on your bill, and you're like, what the heck is that? Oh, that's for all those things in the mini bar that you took. So either don't take the things out of the mini bar, or here is kind of a workaround that was suggested by somebody online. If you use the mini bar for your own uses, when you get done, put everything back exactly where it goes, take a time-dated picture, go down and check out of the hotel, make sure that there are no charges on your bill, and if there are, show them the picture, the time-dated picture that you just took, of everything in the mini bar exactly the way it's supposed to be. And this writer says they've never had any issue with getting things reversed in a situation like that. So not many mini bars still out there. But if you run into one, that's an idea of a way to be able to use that mini bar and get away with it. But don't be surprised if taking things or moving things around in the mini bar results in an automatic charge to your bill. Finally, one last little thing here, Tom, I see is that here is the American Customer Satisfaction Index. They're talking about hotels, restaurants, websites for travel, things like that. And there's a takeaway from this report. I'm not going to go into all of their ratings and stuff, but they say people are happier and both sides are happier. If you find something wrong, give them a chance to fix it. People who give vendors an opportunity to fix it are generally happier than folks who do not. So that's one little thing to keep in mind. Make you a smarter and a happier traveler.
Very good. Very good. Good stuff, Mark.
Before we pause for the news here at the bottom of the hour, we have a little short promotion about a special show that's going to happen next Sunday night at Cordova High School at the new Performing Arts Center out there at 6:30 in the evening. And joining us on the phone is Jacob Gutierrez Montoya. And Jacob is a part of the program. Jacob, tell us about what's going to happen at Cordova High School. This is, by the way, a part of the Pride Month here for the LGBT community in Sacramento and around the planet.
We are really excited about putting on this show again. We actually did it one time in May 11th, and we had this overwhelming response to the show, and so we decided to do an end of Pride Month kind of encore performance of that show. This was received so well, so much education, so much information, and we're able to really reach a lot of people who have had experiences with being LGBTQ plus or not, just allies or people who knew nothing about the community. So it's been a really, really a great process.
Tell our listeners a little bit about the show. It's a dance show.
Yeah. So Sacramento Contemporary Dance Theater is a nonprofit. We've been pairing with different entities throughout Sacramento for the last 5 years. And this time we decided to do something very specific to Pride Month. And the show takes you through, there's two acts to it. The first act takes you through the journey of what it's like for someone to come out LGBTQ+ and have it not supported by the people who, let's say, are their main support system, let's say their parents. And will we show this process of these young people getting stripped of this opportunity to kind of be who they are right out the gate a little bit. We're doing another alternative version to someone who's coming out, and then their parents are more willing to make an effort and give a little bit more. Well, just love them unconditionally. The show, in general, takes us through a couple versions of what it's like for LGBTQ+ to come out. And then the second act of the show, so it's not all sad, don't worry, or it's not all heavy, if you will. The second act of the show is narrated by Johnny Reinhardt, who is a drag queen from Los Angeles, and we're partnering with him, coming up from Los Angeles to narrate the show again for us, and we tell how our community has fought for where we are, our vibrancy, the things that make us so special. The show just really celebrates and puts a really beautiful color on life.
Jacob, the tickets cost how much?
The tickets are $20 ahead of time. You get them online at scdtheater.org, or they are $25 at the door.
Okay, and we will put a link at travelguysradio.com if you're interested in tickets so that you can get them. The show is next Sunday night at 6:30 out at Cordova High School. Jacob, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
And Tom, next weekend I will be in New York City, so we will have a live report on the Travel Guys from the 50th anniversary of World Pride in New York City next weekend.
All right, coming up after the news, Steve LaRosa is in studio. We're off to New Mexico. Steve, what are we going to look at?
That's right, Tom. We went to New Mexico. We visited Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and Taos, and went into a lot of old churches, Tom. There's one on every street corner, I think.
All right. Well, that'll be coming up right after the news. By the way, go to travelguysradio.com for pictures and information about all that we talk about here on the Travel Guys. And don't forget, coming up at 3:45 or a little after that, I have Paul Fling in studio. Paul survived a hurricane, one of the biggest ever, back in 1992. He's going to join us to talk about it.
If you ever plan to motor west,
here we go down the Route 66. It's Mark and Tom and Steve. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacation. Steve, thanks for coming in today.
Well, I had a great time in New Mexico, Tom. I really, really do like New Mexico. We went to Albuquerque.
Was this your first trip there?
No, I'd been to Taos once before. We screened a documentary we did back in the early 90s.
Well, okay. When you were with KCRA,
no,
Channel 3?
No, this was for...
For KVIE,
yeah,
maybe, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, shall we begin?
Yes, okay. Yes. Okay. Were we starting in Albuquerque? And
yeah, we flew into Albuquerque, and, you know, this is one of those travel tips that Mark could have probably jumped in on, but we found out when we looked around, flying into Albuquerque was cheaper by about $100 than flying into Santa Fe.
Is that, do you think that's a consistently cheaper?
Mark?
Yep, it is. And the reason it is because Albuquerque is a Southwest city and Santa Fe is not. So Albuquerque gets the benefit of having, when Southwest is in a city, it's traditional that airfares are about 20% lower than they would be otherwise. So also Albuquerque gets bigger planes than Santa Fe gets.
There you go. You know, we need a segment called The Travel Answer Man.
What does Mark know?
So, of course, you got to go to the plaza in Old Town. A lot of authentic charm with numerous restaurants, street musicians and shops and galleries. So many galleries. This trip was a lot about looking at old churches and looking at great Southwestern art. So Southwestern Mexican art housed in adobe buildings. And, you know, bought a few items. And, of course.
Like what?
Some art that I hung on my patio.
Okay, awesome. Yeah.
And so right there in the plaza, like everywhere else, San Felipe de Neri Church, the oldest in Albuquerque. And here's the amazing thing. 5 feet thick adobe walls. I mean, environmentally correct, right?
There you go. Now, do you or Mark, either one of you, do you have any idea as to why they build the wall so thick? Is it for the heat or what?
Yeah, heat in the summer, cold in the winter. And then, you know, they all have those little adobe fireplaces. Mm-hmm. Just about everybody's house has one of them. Anyway, we also did, of course, Route 66, which is also known as Central Avenue in that portion of Albuquerque. And I looked it up. There used to be 100 motels in that stretch of Albuquerque. Now there's only around 40. But, you know, it's a very nostalgic thing. If you ever traveled as a kid across country, all those little motels. But a lot of them were boarded up. But it was fun. We ate at the 66 Diner, one of those old classic 50s diners.
Mm-hmm.
And with Mark's recommendation, we also dined at the Standard Diner. Mark?
Yep, an old service station, old Standard Oil service station that's been turned into a diner. Generally, I like to go to the Standard Diner for dinner and down to the Route 66 Diner for dessert.
Yeah,
fascinating.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And Mark, I don't know, did you ever visit the El Vado Motel also on?
Yeah. There's been a huge effort in the last 8-10 years, Steve, along Central Avenue there to fix up. Previously, almost all of those hotels were in disrepair, and now they have selectively gone in and fixed up the ones that were more fix-upable, if that's a word. So that's why some of them now are in better shape than others. But the El Vado is one of the old classic Route 66 motor courts.
Yeah, it's great. One of our favorite people that we met down there was a guy named Metal. He's in a metal rock band, and they have all these little shops. They repurposed the motel. It's still a working motel, but they have these little shops, and his was called Metal. And when we walked in, he said, "Hey, would you like to dive into the maggot pit?" Which is much like the ball crawl at Chuck E. Cheese or something like that. And I said, "No, thanks," but he took a dive in it for us. Anyway, also on Central Avenue, Chemo Theater. Did you ever visit the Chemo, Mark?
I have not.
Oh, amazing. Unlike the Alhambra, like the El Vado, it was saved by the city. And we got to snoop around, got the 50-cent tour from the manager there. In the language of nearby Pueblo Isleta people, Chemo means king of its kind, and it lives up to the name. It's the first theater constructed in Pueblo Deco style and American Indian and Art Deco. And this place is spectacular. You got to snoop around there if you get a chance to just pop in. And we also stopped at the National Hispanic Cultural Center, and they had an exhibit on Quechola. It was an exhibit on Chicano homegirls, but this is a nationally known cultural center. And then after that, we headed up to Taos.
There you go. And
beautiful
what did
place.
Have you been there a few times, Mark?
I have. It's a little bit. Some folks think it's a little bit touristy for an Indian Pueblo. So I'm kind of for a Native American Pueblo. Correction. I'm interested to hear what Steve's impressions were.
I loved it. I'd been to Taos once before, as we mentioned earlier, and I love Taos. And we took Mark's recommendation, Tom, by the way, and we stopped at El Santuario de Chimayo, in the village of Chimayo. And the adobe church there, another church, like I said, was built in 1816 and hosts over 300,000 visitors a year. The reason being, they have a small room called El Poquito. It means the little well, and it contains a round pit, and it's the source of holy dirt, and it's believed to have healing powers. And it was wild. And in the adjacent prayer room, they display many religious offerings and discard things like discarded crutches and other testimonials of purported healing. But the miracle I wanted to ask Mark was, how in the heck did you maneuver a tour bus on those narrow streets with the tight turnarounds?
Well, yeah, Taos is a little bit more of a pedestrian city. When you go up there with a group or you're on a large vehicle, you can't go to, you can't get into all of, so you've got to be able to hoof it a little bit and be able to walk around. And of course, as you've seen and as your pictures show, there are some parts of the Pueblo where people are welcome to go into, but there are some parts that are off limits to visitors.
By the way, if you're going to go stay in Taos, I highly recommend El Monte Sagrado Hotel and Spa. Beautiful. It's built in a Pueblo motif. Great customer service. They give you a little business card to take with you, and you can call them and say, come pick me up. I'm down at the plaza.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a nice little treat. We visited the Kit Carson home, Mark. We dropped in to his home. And by the way, Kit Carson, Tom, who had the presence of mind to build his house right there on Kit Carson Road.
Cute. Okay.
I got a million of them. It's full of memorabilia of Carson and the family he raised when he was there, when he wasn't out leading expeditions. And but the most spectacular thing in Taos, Mark, I don't know if you ever went outside of town to see the Taos Pueblo.
Yep.
Oh, man. Is this place spectacular or what? Native American community, multi-storied adobe buildings, Tom, like an adobe apartment building, three or four stories high, continuously inhabited for over 1,000 years. Amazing.
Wow. There you go. I mean, the landlord's got to be happy about that.
Yeah. You know, the great thing about this place is... a lot of the Native Americans who live there, they have a little gallery or a shop in their front room, and you know they sell their art. It was very cool. We met a lot of really sweet people, but you know another interesting, they have doors where you can walk in, but when they were built, no doors, and the reason being, you'd climb the ladder, hop on the roof, pull up the ladder so the bad guys couldn't get you at night or puma.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the Pueblo, Mark?
Well, the Taos Pueblo is really interesting. One good thing about that Pueblo is that it's very accessible to people. Some folks think it's a little bit commercial and that some of the other Pueblos that are a little harder to get to are a little less commercialized, which makes absolute sense. The Native Americans are only doing what we have done to each other for the last 100 or so years. When you're a tourist, there's stuff by the side of the road for you to buy. So in this case, people are welcoming you into their homes in some cases to sell you their trinkets. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it was great. And of course, a great church on site there too. A lot of churches.
Well, don't forget, folks, next week, Steve will be back for the second half of our tour of Mexico. So certainly join us for that. Steve, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, coming up after the break, let's go back to 1992. What's it like to survive a hurricane? Find out here on The Travel Guys. It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the fact that the hurricane season, bad weather season in certain parts of the world have begun, advising people to think hard about it before they go on vacation. And recently, I was visiting with one of my coworkers, Paul Fling, who back in 1992 had quite an experience going on vacation in what would be considered the hurricane season. It's a great story. There's a lot of information that can make you a smarter traveler, so stick around for it. Paul, welcome to the Travel Guys.
Well, thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, let's start by telling us, first of all, about your decision to go to Hawaii. And did you even consider the fact that that might be hurricane season? Let's begin at the beginning here.
No, actually, we didn't. It was my wife and I and our two young kids who were both still in diapers at that time, way back then, and we were just planning a family vacation. We had no idea about hurricane season, whether that would affect the Hawaiian Islands at all. This was only about a week or 10 days after Hurricane Andrew had come through Florida and just made a terrible mess out of that situation there. But we weren't thinking about that happening in Hawaii. So we had planned this months in advance, and we thought, well, we'll just go have a good time. So we went out there without even thinking about it.
What island did you go to?
To the island of Kauai.
Where were you staying?
At Poipu Beach.
And, wow.
Yeah.
And so you were pretty much in storm headquarters there.
We were. As a matter of fact, the eye would come ashore at exactly that point a few days after we arrived there. So, but when we first arrived, the hurricane was more than 500 miles to the southwest, I believe. And we had no idea that there was even a danger that it would come toward the islands. And then when the first day we were there on the TV news, on the weather, they were talking about how, well, you know, it's kind of turning in a direction toward the islands and stuff. We, again, didn't really think much of it until the surf started to pick up and the sky started to kind of turn gray. And then the waves were huge and people were going out to where they're in Poipu. There's a blowhole where if any of your listeners are familiar with that, you can go out and watch the blowhole, you know, shoot up like a geyser. People were watching that because it was spectacular. But we still had no idea that there was going to be a problem. And so we were staying in the Kapili condominium complex there right at the shoreline. And we went to bed the night of, that would, I guess, be September 10th or 11th. We went to bed that night, and it was raining a little, but nothing extreme. And we were awakened by tsunami sirens at about, 4 o'clock in the morning. And so we got up and thought, what the heck is that? And we turned on the TV, and they were doing the emergency broadcast system already, you know, wow, telling you to get to shelter, get to higher ground, and expect, you know, storm surge. And being Californians, we had absolutely no idea what to do other than to try and follow their instructions.
Did anybody from the condominium complex, anybody come knocking on doors? And
eventually they did, but people were already reacting to it. You know, people were coming out of their condos and trying to get into cars, and we were advised to go to Lihue, to the, you know, the main town there where the airport is, and to take shelter at the community college there, I guess, is built as a shelter for hurricanes. It was reinforced. We went to Lihue and went to the community college and sheltered there with about, I will guess, 300 to 500 other Haoles. Who were all there, and we were all fairly afraid. A lot of us had not been through it before. The storm was approaching during the whole day, and as nightfall came is when the eye came ashore. And I've never been through an experience like that in my life. It was unbelievable. You're sheltering in this concrete building, and things on the outside of the building are striking the outside of the building with great force, enough to shake the whole building. And you don't know what those items are. You can't tell what you don't know what's out there. You don't know if the whole building's going to come down. And the winds were it was a Category 4 hurricane, so however strong that is. But right before sundown, when you could still see outside, I remember standing at a window, which was a stupid thing to do, but I was standing with a bunch of other guys. For some reason, it was all men, all standing by the window. And we're looking out there from the inside the community college, and stuff was blowing by horizontally. And I'll always remember a shed, a fully intact corrugated shed, maybe 10 feet square, just went blowing by horizontally, maybe 20 feet off the ground, right across where we were looking. And it was just tumbling like the Wizard of Oz. I was going, that is unbelievable. Shortly after that, a piece of the corrugated metal from someone's roof or something came up and hit the window. And that's when I just took shelter. I said, no, I'm not going to stand here anymore, and went under the pool table that was in the room.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Paul Fling, one of my coworkers who survived and lived through the earthquake back in 1992 in Hawaii. Paul, when you guys exited the shelter, what did you find?
Well, so, yeah, that was morning. We came out, and it was beautiful weather, strangely enough. You come outside, and it's as if nothing had ever happened weather-wise. It was, 80 degrees and sunny. But the entire island was completely ruined. There was no electric power. There was no running water. And basically, every tree and every phone pole had been either torn down or at least knocked to the side. There were very few utility poles left standing. And roads were blocked. You couldn't get around very easily at all. Now, we had taken our rental car to the shelter. It had spent the night out in the parking lot. And this is kind of a funny thing, is that it was a little Chevy Geo. And we thought, well, we have to get back to the condominium complex if we can, because there's all these people at the shelter and nothing was working, no facilities. It was pretty gross. So we wanted to get back to, if we could, get back to the apartment complex. So we went, and the car had been completely ruined. It had been smashed. All the windows were smashed out of it. It was all banged up. There was water in the floor pans. But when I got in the car and turned the key, it turned on. And in fact, the air conditioner still worked. So we were able to make our way back to the complex eventually, though we took a very long way around because most of the roads were ruined. And it was also very odd that when we got there, our ground floor condo was maybe ankle deep or knee deep in mud. There was a palm tree right through the slider into the living room lying on the floor. And but all of our stuff that we'd put in the upper shelves was okay. It was intact. No water had touched it. And we were able to find an apartment upstairs that was totally untouched. It was pristine. So the manager let us in up there, and we stayed there until we were able to evacuate it about a day and a half later.
Tell me the story about returning your car to the car rental.
Yes. Well, it turns out that the car rental place decided that, since we were foolish and didn't get the insurance waiver, that's another thing that your listeners should always do. If you rent a vehicle, always get the insurance waiver, because we had not done that just to try to save money. And as it turned out, we ended up having to pay for the car because it was totaled. And so that was rather aggravating because, I mean, we couldn't know there was going to be a hurricane, but that's...
Wow.
Yeah. And Paul, you kind of point out something really important there, because you didn't know there was going to be a hurricane, and people frequently with travel situations now will say, well, we didn't know this was going to happen. I didn't know my husband was going to have a heart attack. I didn't know my fiance was going to break up with me. I didn't know there was going to be a hurricane. But that's the reason that insurance exists,
right?
Is so that it is a risk. You pay some money, and if something really horrible happens, you're covered. If nothing horrible happens, you're out that money.
Right.
So you have to kind of make a decision. But certainly when you're headed to areas that are more prone to have these situations happen at certain times of the year, then you need to be more attentive. In some cases, you might not take insurance. You might feel like that your homeowner's insurance will cover you. And if you know that, that's great. But if you don't know that, you could be responsible for a car that could add up to $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, the small amount of money that you would pay for the insurance waiver, if nothing happened, is definitely worth it. There's no question about that.
Most people think that their personal automobile insurance will cover them as they move into a rental car, but that is only to a certain degree. Your insurance company said what?
Well, they covered a portion of it, but we were still out of pocket about $5,000. For that experience. So, yeah, we did have they covered what they could.
What was the most challenging part following the earthquake in regards to getting your life back to normal? Obviously, your vacation was pretty well ruined, and then you had to find your way home. What was that like?
Well, initially, once we did get back to the condo complex and did find that nice, pristine place to stay, which was great, but it still had no electricity, no water, and we still had two in diapers, and we had no food. And we had, very little drinkable water. That's something that if you're ever going to go to a place like this, I think it's a good idea to go to one of the stores nearby when you first, land and on your way to wherever you're going to stay and get supplies, get water. If you do have kids that young, get some extra supplies for that, too, because we had almost nothing. And we had to try to survive almost, it was almost like, Stone Age, because we had no facilities whatsoever. And we eventually did get to sort of limp back to the airport, and it was like being evacuated at the airport an airlift. That's really what it was. Planes were coming from Honolulu, coming in, landing, filling up with folks, and then taking off, and as quickly as they could, the next plane would come in and do the same thing. It was like leaving a third world country in an emergency.
Any final advice to listeners that may be thinking of traveling anywhere where hurricane season might exist?
I would say, again, just to repeat, make sure if there's a hurricane forming somewhere near where you're going, plan for that and even consider maybe whether you want to, maybe postpone the trip. Because if we had only known, that's all I can tell you. It was 500 miles away, didn't seem that bad, but it can travel quickly to where you are without any kind of warning. So,
Paul, thanks for spending a little bit of time with the Travel Guys, helping to make our listeners smarter travelers, and glad it all worked out.
Yes, me too. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Bottom line is, be careful when the hurricane season comes. Do your homework. It's here, particularly August and September is the peak time. And remember, there's not only an Atlantic hurricane season, but we've got cyclones in the Pacific, too. So as Paul found out, there's weather on both sides, on both oceans. So do your homework if you're headed out there, particularly in the August-September time of year, if you're in this hemisphere, and flip it if you're in the southern hemisphere.
Tom, we literally are down to the last few seconds. I'm going to say, dance like nobody's watching.
And I'm going to say, join us next week for part two with Steve LaRosa. Off to New Mexico we go. Stay well, my friends.
He never has the time to turn around.